response.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
It's the Mixcast, and my name is Steve Miggs. I'm here with the Reverend Infuego.
Hi.
Glenn Cannon.
Well, hi there.
It's good to see you guys.
Yeah.
We missed you last week.
Yeah, sorry I missed you last week. I was actually saying farewell to my pops. He was here in town.
And, did he have a great time? It seemed like he had a great time.
He had an awesome time. We went and rode bikes together, and just had a great visit. I hadn't seen my mom and dad in over a year. So mom flew out, but dad drove out because I had found that killer deal on that Harley for him.
And he took it back.
Yeah, so we fixed it, went and rode Harleys, and then he towed it back.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah, he stayed an extra day and was leaving Tuesday morning, and I was like, oh, hey guys.
No snowstorms on the way back?
No, he did well. He went way south. He took a very southern route.
Has life changed for them since they became podcast stars?
I don't know.
Dude, great feedback on that episode.
That's
though.
Cool.
So many people loved your parents.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it was rad too because you know you could tell the fans of the cast like they'd see photos of me and my dad. They'd be like, "Oh, that's Big Rod."
Yeah,
like they totally knew. So.
That's so killer.
They really, really, really enjoyed that.
That was so much fun.
Thanks again,
dude. Anytime they're back in town, they've
seriously.
Got
seriously.
Yeah, they've got an open door. We got to do that some more because we didn't even unearth all the stories.
Well, and it was funny, too.
And we got to get you in an Elvis costume at some point.
Yeah, I think they thought they were just going to come kind of sit quietly and watch.
Oh, no.
Nope.
And they walk in and there's like headphones and mics set up for my parents.
It's go time.
So they're like, oh, my goodness. You know, so yeah. And then, of course, as we're leaving, my mom got real quiet. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? She's like, I really hope we didn't embarrass you. And I'm like, what? And mom, no, it was amazing. It was amazing. And I'm like, listen, the worst thing that could have happened is that you'd be so worried about what to say that you wouldn't say anything at all.
Yeah.
It was incredible. We'll listen to it later. It was a lot of fun, blah, blah.
No, none of the stories
they really enjoyed it.
Yeah, none of them were incriminating or anything. They were just fun stories about you as a kid.
Well, and even if they had been, you know, great.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
great
if
listening.
If we weren't incriminating, we just let Glenn talk.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
By himself.
He does that on his own.
I'll spill the beans on my own. They had an awesome time.
I think whenever they were like, oh, do you feel, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry I gave you a hard time. Like, I give myself a harder time than anyone.
Totally.
Since puberty, I've been doing that. Hey, oh. All right, on that note, let's move on. I'm sorry. We got a couple guests in studio. I'm very excited to have these guys in. Someone that I've been very longtime friends with. He is a major fabric of the Bruiser Brody Posse. My man that's kept my drums in tune and got me home many times when I shouldn't have even been behind the drum set.
A guy that got a copy of our record before I did.
You don't have a copy yet?
No. Hey. Wow, it looks good.
It does.
Yeah.
It truly looks good.
It's our good friend Tavis Flamme. Tavis, how you doing, brother?
Good. How you guys doing today?
Doing great. And also a man that I met thanks to you and an awesome dude and Andy Kimura as well.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Be here.
This is going to be a lot of fun. We so much to talk about. First of all, thank you for getting me home safe so many times
of
from
course.
Bruiser Brody shows.
Well, I mean, as you know, Steve, I spent many years as a drum tech traveling the world with the largest rock bands being a drum tech.
Alice in Chains,
Faith No More. Members of Jane's Addiction. Yes, absolutely.
Bruiser Brody.
But to be honest,
say it, but I didn't. To be honest with you, no, truly.
I can't even say it with a straight face. It's like Alice in Chains, Jane's Addiction, Faith No More, Bruiser Brody.
No, it's. But
Stephen Perkins, Mike Borden, Sean Kinney, Steve Mix.
They are great drummers, truly. I've been blessed to work with some really good drummers and great fellow human beings as well. Good
yeah.
people, just good people.
And I think every time you've gotten me home, at some point, I'm in the car, wasted, driving shotgun, and I'm just like, put on 3 days by Jane's Addiction again. Like, that's our tradition.
Yeah.
At some point.
That's not a bad way to travel anywhere, man.
It's the greatest song ever written.
When
you're wasted, it's even better.
Yes, and the fact that that song was done in one take. And they hated each other, despised each other.
Yeah, tell that story, because that's a pretty incredible story. And I'll pull up the song so we can like listen to it as
absolutely.
You tell it. Absolutely. Because you were a part of the whole experience.
Well, no, I was there around the area because Eric Avery, the bass player, and I were really close friends and still are to the day. He, for years, was my AA sponsor for 20-something years.
Which is nuts.
Yeah, so, but the story that I was told was they went into the studio. They're almost done with the album with Ritual, which was their third album. And they had like one or two more songs they needed to finish to complete the album. And they were fighting and not liking each other. And the record company and management all got together and brought them back down and said, okay, you guys need to do one more song. You know, basically saying, if you don't finish this, we'll shelve you and no one will listen to you.
Wow.
And so they got in the studio and recorded this gem from beginning to end, just not liking each other. You know, there's riff and the band was broken up and getting back together and, you know, just all that and hating each other. And they recorded this song. And then basically at the end of it, you just see Perry drop. They're still playing and he just leaves the room.
No.
Yeah.
I didn't know that part. So he leaves. He's done with the band before they're even finished recording the song.
Yeah. He walks out. They're still like playing and then Perry was gone. There's a movie out there called The Gift.
Yes. Yep.
And that's
a weird movie.
Yes. It's twisted weird. It's like the monkeys and
I mean, you're seeing them high on heroin. In that movie. Yeah.
Especially, I think that's where Navarro does. Let me show you the trick my eel can do.
Yeah.
That's in The Gift somewhere,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It is actually an eel. It's not his phallus.
Wow.
Rev, you made
not
a face.
Not a euphemism?
You made a face.
Yeah.
But Perkins drums, I mean, every one of those guys, just those jams and coming together are just so powerful. You think they're just synced and loving each other. And then
yeah,
it's
you
just
think
like,
they're fully in tune with chemistry because, I mean, it's a 10-minute, in my opinion, it's the most epic song I've ever heard.
Navarro's guitar solo was just shredding. Just, I mean, just like, you're just like, how old was he?
Now, you're like on a full-on journey on this song. Yeah. Like, I mean, even just listening to it in the background, I mean, we're only 2 minutes in on 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And we probably won't get to the whole song, but it's just...
I'd have to say Perk is my favorite drummer to watch that I ever worked for.
Yeah.
He also taught me how to tune drums, you know.
Because you're not even
notes.
A drummer.
No, I don't play drums.
And you became the drum tech for all these great drummers.
See, he got it figured out, man. Yeah. He doesn't have to do any of the frustrating stuff.
No. Right,
like, or deal with any of the nonsense. He tunes the drums. He watches the show.
Yes.
Tavis figured it out. Yes.
He doesn't have to get the death glare for going too fast or going too slow.
He doesn't have to deal with the egomaniacal stuff.
And this has happened multiple times on television, even on video. If the drummer messes up, it always comes back to the
drum tech's fault.
You know what? If he skips a beat with the pedal, boom, that pedal gets thrown on, you know what I mean? It's like, and it's like, no. And then I bring it back to him going, dude, this is a brand new, beautiful pedal. Even the spring tensions are perfect. And he goes, I messed up. I'm like, okay.
Now, you told me that Perkins, when he plays, he tapes his foot to the bass drum pedal.
No, he plays barefoot.
Oh, okay.
And what he'll do is he'll wrap his pinky toe around the pedal and he'll bring it back up.
Gotcha. That's
why
what it
he
was.
And he plays smooth pedals. So
his foot just slips and snaps the pedal real hard.
It does that as well, but when he's playing, he'll grip with his pinky toe and he'll bring it back up faster.
Wow.
Because he's the, you know.
Right. Jeez. I know. I learned these things when I'm wasted in Travis.
It's amazing.
We should have an ongoing podcast that's wasted in Travis's car where I learned things about all my favorite. Did you ever have to be the guy that has to squirt water in on mic? Is my microphone acting weird now?
No, I think you're fine.
Mike okay, Gordon. I didn't know.
Yes.
Mine seems to be, of course, I'm scared to touch it, but I think they fixed mine.
Mike,
did they
Borden.
Fix it?
Did you ever have to squirt water into Mike Borden's face?
Absolutely.
And did you ever miss?
No. Shake weight. No. I'd have to say.
Oh, an old fashioned.
You ever watching Faith No More and his guy is always squirting water in his mouth?
But the funny
like a football
thing,
player.
The funny thing is the first show that I did with Faith No More. We did a few other ones, but the first one, which was a huge show, was Coachella, and it was their return.
Yeah.
You know, it was their return. So Mike and I were sitting up there on the stage and it's like Faith No More and Muse and, you know, and it's their first show back in the U.S. reunited, you know, big proper show. And there's 80,000 people out there. And he looks at me and he goes, okay, it's going to be a hot one because it was outside Indio. And he's like, well, yeah, I'm going to need, you know, I'm going to give you some signs because it all has to be done while he's playing.
Right.
So, I mean, he has you tune his drums while he's playing. He'll look at a drum kit, look at me, and he'll go up, like bring it up, or he'll look down, bring it down. Jeez. So I'll have to get in there while he's playing mid-stroke and like crank up a couple times. I mean, drums are only going
to
go out of
tune. Fun to have your head that close to a snare drum.
Right? Against a guy whose power is like ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And hearing and also just the fear of him slamming on your head or your face or your hand.
And then he goes, and it was funny because I was also helping, I was taking care of Patton. So I had dual duties. I was teching for Patton as well as Borden. So if Patton goes out stage, you know, out in the crowd, I'm with him. I'm security, doing it all, you know, with him as well, doing everything. And but beforehand, back to the water bottle, Borden looks at me and goes, okay, while I'm playing, I'll give you a couple more signs that you'll learn. He goes, okay, what's up? He goes, I want you to, if it's hot, I'll look at you and I'll just look up. That means pour the water on my head. If I look at you and open my mouth, pour the water into my mouth as he's playing. And he goes, Jesus. Do me a favor. I hate to feel plastic on my teeth, so don't let the plastic hit my teeth. So I'm just sitting there, and he's playing, but he's holding his head so perfectly. It's easy. I was like a mama bird feeding a little baby bird. You know? Truly, it was.
I love it.
And I even told him that. But the best part was.
Did you ever screw up the signals and you're like, you're tuning a drum? He's like, no, I need water in my mouth. Stat.
So thirsty. Why'd
you pour water on my tune? No, I'm sorry, I got the signals.
I'm dehydrated.
Patton, though. Oh, what a gem. That guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, he seems like he's a complicated dude.
I'll have to come back and tell stories about that, but...
Yes. Let's kill this music, because, yeah, there's a reason why you're here, and it's actually something that has nothing to do with music.
Yes.
It has to do with the martial arts.
Absolutely.
And that's how I met Andy, because Andy, I'm looking forward to hearing your story and telling your story, because your pops is Taki Kimura, and he was Bruce Lee's best man at his wedding.
Yep, best friend and senior most student.
Yes.
So, yeah, where should I start? I mean, you guys have any specific questions?
I just think let's just start off just the lore of Bruce Lee. Yeah, I think it's something. I know Gregor's walking by, and I know he wanted to meet you guys because he's big into the martial arts, and hopefully he sticks around so he has a chance to meet you guys. Because I mean, obviously, you being so close to the Bruce Lee family and just Bruce Lee in general. I mean, your dad is his best friend. What's your take on just the lore that is Bruce Lee in the eyes of so many? I mean, he is one of the most iconic pop culture martial arts figures of all time.
Yeah, figure in general. I mean, there's not a lot of places you can go in the world and regardless of what language people speak or whatever, you know, they understand Bruce Lee. You know, that's one of the things.
And he's buried right behind us.
Yeah.
Yep, on Lakeview Cemetery here.
Over there, yeah.
But, what an iconic figure. And just to have the perspective of him through my father, of just the personal thing and all the stories and... he was an incredible person, really a great human being. He wanted to do a lot for his people and for, you know, for humans in general, right? For equality. And he broke a lot of barriers in film and in martial arts as far as, back in those days in the 60s and stuff. And before that, martial arts was very clannish and it was very secretive. And, he got in trouble initially in Oakland for teaching Caucasians and non-Chinese. And when confronted by the Chinese community to say, hey, you know, we don't want you to teach our secrets to the whites and blacks and all these other people because they're going to beat us up and they'll use it against us. And Bruce was like,
really?
Yeah, I mean, that was the fear, obviously. And a lot of that was, you know, very secretive back in the day, you know, even carried on through families and things like that, right? And it wasn't taught outside. Even us for years when my father taught, he didn't charge, but he had to know someone to get in. It wasn't, you know, he would always tell people, don't tell people about the school. Don't tell people you're working out with us because we're not looking for students. And I don't want people out there bragging and, you know, right, starting trouble and all these kind of things. So,
So is that why Bruce created his own form of martial arts, was because he felt that other forms of martial arts were just being too exclusive?
Partially that, but he was really an innovator. You know, he was on his own journey. He was big into philosophy and all these other kind of things. One of the people he was big on was Krishnamurti. He was a guy who had a famous speech that he did about truth is a pathless land. And Bruce's philosophy really kind of jives with that, in that nobody can tell you what your truth is. You can't get it in a book. You can't get it from anyone else because you're your own person. You have to walk your own path. And so for him, it was, you know, ultimately finding the truth in unarmed combat, right? He had done Wing Chun, which was a traditional martial art, and while it was very effective, you know, every style, every way has its own strengths and its own weaknesses. And so for him, it was researching that. And ultimately, he coined the term Jeet Kune Do, which was the way of the intercepting fist, which is what he called his art. And it ultimately was really tailored to the individual. Like, you know, him and my father had talked about opening a chain of schools throughout the United States. And at a certain point, Bruce realized, you know, that if I have this many people and I'm not individually teaching each person, then they just become a paycheck and not an individual. And Jeet Kune Do needs to be taught to each individual, tailored like a code or something, right? Steve, you got your strengths, you have a wrestling background, mm-hmm. and you're pretty tall. So what you would maximize or want to do in a fight or in a self-defense situation would be different than, you know, Tavis or I, right? Because mm-hmm. we're built differently. We have different strengths.
Tavis will squirt water in your face and blind you.
Dunk it right on your head.
I'll just berate you.
I'll run away very slowly. I'll just berate you. Just berate you down. Right
up, yeah. I'll cry and beg you not to touch me. What do you want? Take my Nordstrom's gift card that I got for Christmas.
What? Does it work at the rack?
That's interesting. It's case by case and for each individual within this one martial art.
It actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
absolutely. It makes a lot of sense.
Well, yeah. The fact, too, that was for me, what Andy, I mean, because for me, the only martial arts I've ever studied was from Mr. Kimura. When I, you know, when I went and met him, I didn't even, you know, I watched one Bruce Lee movie. I still haven't watched any. But for me, the way that he was able to direct me in that same vision that Bruce had, it, you know, the self-exploration, it wasn't just about martial arts. It was about, you know, completely discovering oneself, you know, from top to bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, like he was saying, that's one of the biggest proponents for me that brought me there was, it was like, hey, it's about your discovery.
Yeah, ultimately, that's what we want to do is, you know, it's a vehicle for self-actualization, right? To become a, hopefully you never have to use what we teach, right? Hopefully, I always tell my students, hopefully you never have to actually have to defend yourself. If you do, you have it. But if not, this is a vehicle for becoming a better person, living a better life, being a better father, husband, friend, whatever, right? Just to, you know, the first time somebody came to me and said, when I'd been teaching for a short while, that, you know, I'm, because of working out with you, I've taken some chances in my life and I've found courage to do things I've been afraid to do before and
really
and opened a business or whatever it was. And, you know, I'm happy for the first time in my life and I want to thank you. And it was like the first time somebody told me that, I knew this is what I want to do. And, you know, I could die happy tomorrow knowing that I helped somebody.
That's, you know, remarkably rewarding. I mean, yeah. you got to love, that's amazing, you know, to get that kind of feedback. You change someone's life.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
there's nothing more important or special than that, man.
No, it's deep. I mean, it really is, yeah.
Yeah, the idea of just powerful. Leaving some kind of a legacy is always, I mean, that you couldn't ask for, in my opinion, that is way above any kind of monetary thing you leave with or whatever it may be. The fact that, you know, someone's life has been impacted, like Glenn said, because of someone is incredibly powerful.
Yeah, and hopefully they pass that on, right? And we kind of make our corner of the world a better place, hopefully.
Go ahead. The one thing I was going to ask you was, relationship behind with your father going into, you know, did it ever, because you guys lived together for so long and then he trained you everything, you know, so being together 24/7, how was that, was that hard or, you know,
yeah,
explain,
I mean,
a little bit of that, because that's where all of his martial arts, his father, Bruce's, you know, a lot of his martial arts came from. Directly his father.
Just nonstop interaction.
Nonstop.
It's a 24/7 class.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, exactly. We didn't throw the football or the baseball or anything. We did martial arts, you know, my. But,
you
know,
ever like, hey, Dad, stop teaching me right now. I just want a father son. You know, like, I just want to watch TV.
Well, Bruce was always a big part of our life. You know, I mean, I can remember a couple of times that he forgot to pick me up at school because somebody came out of town that he didn't know from out of town or, you know, from around the world that just wanted to know about Bruce. And he would take his day off and take them around, take them mm-hmm. out to lunch and show them, because he wanted to be able to help people and impact people's lives and find out, you know, why they were there and what they were interested in Bruce and what kind of strength they were trying to gain from that or whatever, you know. So he was very selfless with his time.
And your father was the only person that can teach Bruce's way, right? I mean, you as well, but obviously it was something where, like, I mean, you could probably explain it better than I can, but it's something where Bruce was like, hey, if I'm not around, I'm only wanting you to do this.
Well, yeah, of course, Bruce didn't know he was going to pass away at 32 or whatever, but while he was alive, he had three individuals that he had okayed to teach his art and were running his schools in Seattle, Oakland, and Los Angeles. Seattle was my father. Oakland was James Lee, who's passed away, and California was Danny Inosanto. So Danny Inosanto is still around and in L.A., going strong, teaching. And so if you are a teacher, you have to be generally from one of those lineages.
Gotcha.
Although, you know, and again, in the wake of Bruce's death, a lot of his original students have come out and begin to share what they know because, you know, it's all, everyone kind of has a part of the piece of the puzzle in that sense. But
how many people do you think had that piece of the puzzle?
I mean, there's quite a few people. I've met a lot of guys from, you know, the original days who just were guys that worked out and never, you know, ended up teaching or anything, but worked out with them. And just because Bruce was like that, he would tell people, everybody, a little bit of a different thing. I mean, you know, very similar things, but at the same time, he would, you know, he's very personable and he would give people that certain little gem of wisdom. And so every once in a while, you hear something different, you know, from a different person or a technique that he maybe taught somebody in a little bit of a different way or something.
Does your dad have a favorite story about Bruce or a favorite pearl of wisdom that he continues to share with you or other people? Did, you know, is there a fun story or even just a powerful story about his relationship with Bruce Lee?
Well, I guess there's a powerful one that I think of first, and that is Bruce is famous for saying, walk on, you know, that regardless of what it is, you got to kind of continue your journey.
I heard that forward, a lot from girls in high school.
You and me both.
They added the word bye, Steve. It was walk on by. It's a little different, I
keep
think.
Keep walking.
I think it was a little different.
Oh, I thought I was learning from Bruce this whole time.
Bruce was walk on. I think they added a word, which does change things slightly, just slightly.
Solid point, Glenn.
But if you're being like water, then you just kind of pour by.
That's
you just kind of flow by.
Keep going.
You just keep flowing.
Kind of drip on by.
Stop looking at me. They also said that. So I'm sorry. Walk on. No,
you're fine.
Sorry, we just goofed.
Good. Lighten the mood. Thank you. I appreciate that. But yeah, so, you know, my dad had a rough period. He lost both of his brothers within about a year of each other, both of his older brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And then divorced from my mother. And through all of that kind of stuff, I can remember a conversation that he had with my dad and just said, hey, you know, I understand you're going through all this pain, and kind of just sat him down. For some reason, I remember this analogy with strawberries. He said, you know, no matter how much you love strawberries, if they give you hives, if you're allergic to them, you can't eat them, right?
Yeah.
So it was sort of this analogy of, you know, I know you love this woman, but if it's bad for you, you got to move on. You got to walk on, you know, and it's essentially just what he told him, you know. And so it's those kind of personal things I think are,
wow,
you know, the kind of deep stories. And,
yeah.
That, and he always told my dad, you know, you're good as anyone else, no better, no worse. You know, when my dad met Bruce, he'd just been out of the internment camps in the Second World War. He was born in this country, but when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor.
Where was he born?
He was born in Littell, Washington, and grew up out in Forks on Nia Bay.
Okay, yeah. I was like, I never even heard of Littell, but by
so
Forks.
Okay. Yeah, so they're like the only Asian family out there, you know. This
oh,
is
my God.
How long was he in the
And this was 94 years ago.
About 5 years.
5 years.
Yeah.
5 years.
Man,
in Washington,
that's
so they had to report to Puyallup Fairgrounds. I never realized that my dad never wanted to go to the Puyallup Fair.
With oh, God. Yeah, he had a little different experience there, than the
so
kids.
They loaded
yeah,
up in
you're like, but Dad, the scones.
Now,
like,
there's a lot of people that forget that happened. There's a lot of,
wow.
I mean, there's a lot of untold and forgotten or brushed past history. And a lot of people forget about the internment camps. And
I didn't know they were at the fairgrounds.
Wow, I didn't either.
Well, that's where the assembly point was for
and then reasons, they carted yeah, everyone off.
And they were putting like blacked out train cars and had no idea where they were going.
God almighty.
You know, they were told like one bag and you can't bring anything else.
That's really wow, awesome.
Right,
what a weird world.
No, man, it's a tragedy.
But
it's
I mean, tragedy. You know, we yeah, were at war. I mean, not to say anything.
That's right, you know, that's a I get where you're coming from. It's a
I don't like war.
It's a response, but it's a really paranoid and it's not a very well thought out response, yeah, as I would say.
Yeah.
Like, dude, you know what I mean? Even some of the things that go on in the world now. And people want to point their fingers and say Muslims. It's like, whoa. Yeah. No.
Right.
No. That's not true yeah, at all,
no,
actually.
Not at all.
You know, so it's,
it's a response from pure fear and pure paranoia, and that's the tragedy.
Yeah.
That's just a failure of humankind.
Absolutely,
it's tragic.
Yeah.
You know,
5 years.
Yeah, but he's part of that greatest generation. You know, he grew up telling me, you know, this is the best country in the world, and
he still does.
And I understand that there was hysteria, and it was a horrible thing. But you know, he's always tried to make peace with it and understand.
That's how he's always described it to me.
Yeah.
Was, you know, in his moments of clarity.
Which I don't get. Like, I don't get a group of people just going. Like, if they told everyone right now, pack your bag, you know. Like, he told me we had to leave our dog, and he's like, to this day, that's the thing that haunts me the most. I don't know what happened to our pet, you know.
Oh, dude, I just saw something I read on the news that today, or someone like said that a man came with a knife and stole a person's dog. Like threatened to stab him, and he's like, give me your dog, and the person gets... Like,
why doesn't that ever happen to me, or someone that...
I was just
going
to say...
All I thought was, I'm getting stabbed, man. I'm going after that guy.
Yeah. I would have taken the knife a couple times for my cat, man. I really would have.
No, but you redirect the knife into him.
Well, I don't know how to do that, so basically I'd be like, well, once he gets it stuck in my ribs, I can start hitting him. That's probably what I would think.
That's why now I walk Lulu with a shield.
But then
use the dog as a shield. Throw the dog.
Steve has one of those plastic riot shields.
No, Lulu.
And the leash comes out from underneath of it.
You ain't taking Lulu if I'm alive.
That guy is so weird. I walked up to say hi to him and he hid behind this riot shield.
But all I was thinking, like, why do you want to steal someone's dog?
I know.
There's so many dogs out there. There are dogs in shelters.
Actually, that question in and of itself, why do you want to steal my dog, is reason enough to take a couple
maybe
a couple good knife wounds.
Maybe it was personal. Yeah.
Like, what are you going to do? I'm making a roast. Okay, this is the part where you stab me as I try and beat you to death.
Yeah, because I'm coming at you.
Yeah.
What's been, we talk about serious stories, but yeah, your pops ever share like a funny or just a lighthearted story about his time being, I mean, being Bruce Lee's best man? That's just, when you picture that in your head, you're just like, wow, that's how close your dad and him were. To be someone's best man. Like, my brother was my best man. You know, I'm like, that's what a best man is.
Andrew released books of not so personal, but some of the letters that, you know, were conversing between Bruce. Because back then it was letter writing.
Right, that was like text for us now. Yeah.
Exactly. So, Letters from the Dragon, is that what it...
Letters from the Dragon.
Yeah,
you know, the trippy thing is, too, you know, we found all these letters, and I thought, man, it's just a shame that people can't see these, and I didn't want to keep them, so I put them in a book so people could see them.
That's really cool. Yeah.
But he told me, man, I threw away all these letters. I burnt a ton of his letters, and I was like, why would you do that? And he's like, well, I thought he'd live forever,
right,
man. I didn't think he was going to die, you know?
Yeah.
No one's thinking like that.
Right?
Wow.
He used to give him clothes.
The other thing,
that's a crazy
excuse me. I was watching. I was watching the Seahawks say, "Go Hawks!"
Yeah.
And when they're in town, they have this thing where they raise the 12th man flag.
Mm-hmm.
His father needs to raise that 12th man flag, because I've seen some of those people they have raise that flag, and it's like,
that would actually be really freaking cool.
Yeah, that would be cool. Taki's been in this community,
the place would go nuts.
Life, he's been in this town his whole life. He's devoted. Here's the other thing you guys don't know. Taki has never made one penny off teaching people martial arts his whole life.
Really?
He did it all for free.
Always, yeah.
Always for free. He provided the space in, you know, at the storefront, wherever was needed to be, he provided it, and he never took money to teach.
Wow.
So he has devoted his whole life to teaching people, helping them, others. You know, that's what I get from the Kimuras, is just how
selfless
they are.
Well, I remember just meeting, when I first met you and I met your dad, I mean, both of you were just like so welcoming.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, I mean, I felt like I was going in already with something against me because I'm friends with Tavis, but you know.
Oh, Lord, another one.
Like, Tavis? You know Tavis?
Run.
No, you know what I mean? Like, it was just like such a welcoming experience, not only you guys, but also everybody there that was training. It wasn't like as if, oh, who's this guy? I felt like I already knew everybody there.
Yeah, Matt's been coming. Matt Koch.
Coke.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, that's one of the things Bruce always said, was it was, you know, the camaraderie of just having a good workout and then just going to have tea or, you know, something to eat after or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the, you know, the culture of the club is what we really have, and that wherever we are, it just kind of has that flavor, you know, of, you know, we work out hard and you just, we're all really close-knit group of guys, and we don't tolerate any kind of, you know, jerks or any of that kind of stuff. So, you know, we just wanted
that was abundantly clear. Everybody was super nice.
Yeah, definitely.
So, is this something where if someone was listening, is like, wow, I'd really like to go check that out. There's somewhere they can go.
Absolutely.
Is there a place where they could get information? Let our audience know, because I'm sure there's people out there that never thought in a million years they could go learn ways of a man that they grew up idolizing, reading about, watching movies.
He'll teach you the one-inch punch.
And for years we weren't public, right? And so now we kind of are. I'm trying to build a student base so I can actually, you know, potentially open a storefront here in Seattle. So
So how do people find you?
Davis, you got that information there?
Yes, absolutely. Of course. Most everybody now is on Facebook.
Yep.
So Facebook just. And we'll give you a link and stuff, but the Junfeng Gung Fu Institute of Seattle.
I'll link it on this description on today's podcast. Yeah. So if you are listening, just go to the description and click that hyperlink for the Facebook page.
Yeah, they can Google Bruce Lee School Seattle at this point, but we'll give them the hyperlink for that. Mm-hmm. And then Tuesdays and Fridays right now, like I said, like Sifu Andrew was saying, this is such a fresh thing being open. You guys are one of the first people that he's gone and talked to about it being now open to the public to come in and start learning, you know.
Awesome. Yeah, so we have two locations right now, one in Kirkland and one in Chinatown that we're teaching out of. So, yeah, give us a call if you're interested, and, yeah, we're happy to entertain it.
That's awesome.
Why now the push to grow and, like, did you reach a point in your life where you thought you wanted to expand this or broaden this? I mean,
it was more, do I want to keep it like my dad's always kind of had in the basement, you know? And at a certain point, I just realized really to do it the justice that I want to be able to do it, I need to be able to do it full time.
Sure.
I work a real job, so I don't really have the time to work out and continue to learn myself and do things like that. So, but ultimately, it's just about, you know, preserving and perpetuating Bruce's art and his philosophy. And
makes sense, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's such a vehicle to be able to help people in so many ways, and it's been one of the most rewarding things I've been fortunate enough to be able to do. And I count myself super fortunate to be, you know, my father's son. We're like best friends, and he's my Sifu, my teacher. So, I mean, I'm one of the luckiest guys in the world. And, you know,
they're like best friends, too. I mean, it's just beautiful seeing them together when we're all together. Because, of course, Sigung, which is my teacher's teacher, Sigung Taki, you know, he's 94 years old. He's battling dementia. He's got severe health issues, you know, which are very taxing. And that's one of the reasons also... Andrew, Sifu Andy can't, it takes away time because they are 24/7 with Taki, taking care of him. His wife is at home.
Yeah.
She quit her job just to take care of Taki.
Let's give the wife a plug. She's the greatest.
She is the greatest.
She should be sainted.
Absolutely. That's because awesome. Monica, she without her, she left her career because with dementia, having that person that they know and love and feel is so important as well. You know, just that feeling of connectivity and being there. But she's put her life on hold and has done nothing but raise, you know, taking care of him. And, of course, Andrew as well. They've only been...
I need a lot of taking care of.
Yes.
We all do. You're not alone, my friend. You are not alone.
This is the podcast for you.
You're among friends.
But, yes, I'll have to come back and we'll have to discuss some more rock stories.
Oh, 100%, yes, absolutely. I definitely...
Or just some of the other stories.
The stupid stuff that happens just in life. But to circle back to what we first started with, the idea of leaving a legacy, it sounds like that's exactly what you're doing, not only for Bruce, but also for your father, to have that legacy continue through someone like Davis or someone that, you know, Matt Koch or anybody that decides to go to the gym, just to continue that energy and putting it out there so that the spirit continues to live on, which I think is a big deal, in my opinion.
I think you'll see a tremendous response to this as well. Yep. I mean, just hearing you talk and the passion and enthusiasm that you share, and then people thinking, my God, I have access to this?
Yeah.
You know, because lot of people...
Well, it's direct.
Yeah.
To be able to be so close. I mean, for me, Bruce Lee was such an inspiration just because of, you know, what I went through with the electrocution and being killed.
Can you share that story? I mean, I know, obviously...
Absolutely.
That's what got you connected with these guys.
Yes. Yeah, and it happened right...
I just want to clarify that the state did not put Tavis in a chair of any kind. This was an accident.
No, because if the state would have put...
I think Mike Borden did this thing when he was squeezing water. He's like, step on that line, Tavis, as you do this.
January, it happened right behind you guys. It happened...
And I'll fill that. It's a quick story, but I call it my circle of life story. It happened January 11th of 2001, 1-11-01, and it happened at exactly 11:42 a.m. And I know that because when the accident occurred, we shut down Capitol Hill, the power line, or the power company. We shut the whole grid down. And when I sued and won, my investigators, of course, went to the city of Seattle and said, exactly what time did that occur? And I was like, it's cool, 11:11 in the morning. It's easy to remember. And but what occurred was I was working for a company, a drywall company. They were called Drywall Distributors. And I was working for them doing estimating and operating their cranes. This was back in 2001. So I just moved back from L.A.
Yep.
And so a crane operator wasn't paying attention. I was on the ground holding the crane, so I had a lock on it.
Oh, no.
And he got wrapped up in the power lines. So
it went to ground through you.
Me. I became the ground. I got the city of Seattle engineer said I got hit with 14,800 volts. It was a 24. I got hit with it twice.
Oh, man.
It was it melted my fillings. And
wow.
So they say with 24 kilovolts that actually 14, that's what the power lines carried and enough amps to power the city. And I took it all. And so 14,800 volts, from what the witnesses said, it threw me. And then what happens with power lines is they have like a three-phase breaker system where most of the times, 90% of the times, a tree branch will fall in or a bird will fall or something will happen and it'll short the power lines. They'll reset the breaker, send another surge of power through the lines to see if it's clear or not. If it's not clear, send out the utility guys. So what happened was the first time it held me on, locked me. And of course, I was killed. I remember every second conscious, the pain. I remember the taste, the smell as it was occurring. And then, of course, I remember the exact moment of when the heart stopped and when I was dead.
Jesus.
And now, did I see it? No, but I just remember it subconsciously.
Yeah.
You know, I remember everything that was happening. And so then what occurred was the witnesses said it threw me. So as soon as that breaker hit, after, you know,
it cut you loose.
It cut me loose, yeah. Threw me 8 feet is what they said. And then like 20 seconds later or something, the next surge of electricity came through the line and they said arced off the truck, the 8 foot, hit me a second time, threw me another 3 feet. But the best part about that is that's what Harborview said started my heart back up.
It jumped you. Yeah.
It jump started.
Jesus.
So, that's 14,800 volts.
I mean, I always knew you got hit on the job by that level of current. I've never heard the whole story.
I mean,
I knew what happened, but this is the first time I've heard the detailed version.
So, how about this? We were driving around one day, and I can't remember where we were going. Tavis and I have gone on many adventures just to eat, do whatever. And he pulls up. And stops at the spot where it happened and tells me the story.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
it was just there.
Right. Like, hey,
hey, man.
Do you want to hear a crazy story about.
You see that burn mark?
Yeah.
Well, no, and that's the thing.
Pretty much like that. He's like, hey, you want to hear a crazy story about this moment right here? And I'm like, okay. And then tell me the story. My jaw drops. I'm like, this is my homie. And I'm like, hearing this whole story. I was like, holy crap.
It took me 7 months at Harborview, and God bless Harborview, because it took 7 months of me being there 5 days a week. Sometimes 8 hours a day, learning how to concentrate, talk without stuttering, walk again. I mean, it was basically like hitting a computer and doing a mass reset or unplugging it when it, you know what I mean? You have to do a mass reboot. So, and that's where the inspiration for Bruce came into play because after, you know, the accident, 7 months of recovery and doing all that, I was with Sean Kinney, the drummer of Alice in Chains. He and I were just friends and... Mm-hmm. We were down hanging out at the Central Tavern, and that was about 8 months after the accident, you know, so of course I lived and went through all the treatment and stuff, and I was sitting at the Central Tavern, and that's when he walked up to me, and he introduced himself, and we had a mutual friend, that's why we were in the same room together, Stackpole, Adam, Andrew walked up to me and introduced himself. There was something going on, my memory, you know, but we were introduced and he invited me to come out and you know, because I think he had heard that I was a boxer and studied boxing and so invited me out. But at that point, I had taken such a headshot with 24,000 volt power line. I just didn't want to risk it. But I didn't really know who Bruce Lee was either, you know, so he had kind of told me that Bruce Lee was also into philosophy. So at that point, I was like, well, let me look into that part. So over the years touring with the rock bands, you know, I studied Bruce Lee and his philosophy and the books that they wrote about him and stuff and just what he said. You know, I've only seen one of his movies, but fast forward to about 3 years ago and I have a daughter. I'm not touring anymore and I'm just, you know, being in Seattle. And I reach out to Andrew and I say, hey, you know, is that invite still open? Can I come out and learn martial arts? And absolutely, door was open for me, 100%. And we went through that. And then about a year ago, and it'll go back to the Jane's Addiction, about a year ago, Eric Avery was on tour with Garbage, my sponsor, the guy we talked about with 3 days.
Jane's Addiction.
And
amongst some other bands as well, Alanis Morissette.
I pick him up. They're playing the Paramount, and this is about a year and a half ago, and they're playing the Paramount, and it's the same thing with you, Steve, same thing. We're sitting, Eric and I are at the Paramount, and he's got like 6 hours till he has to go on stage. So I look at Eric, and I'm like, dude, I'm going to take you up the hill. You know, he's like a brother to me. You know, mm-hmm. He's been my sponsor for 20-something years, and I said, I want to take you to where the accident happened. I don't show many people that, just close people. And he goes, okay, cool. So we drive up to the accident scene from the Paramount, you know, just right up on Capitol Hill, the accident scene was. And I'm sitting there showing him, you know, and then he goes like this. He goes, hey, dude. And he's looking at his phone. He's trying to get a bearing where he's at because he's from L.A. And he goes, you know what's right behind that wall right there about 200 feet away from us right now? And I go, uh-oh, what? And he goes, that's where Bruce Lee's buried.
Oh, wow. It's that close to the spot. Huh?
Literally about 200 feet away from his grave is mm-hmm. where my accident occurred.
Oh, man.
So for me, it became that circle of life story was because I was introduced by the Kimuras to Bruce Lee's philosophy side and who he was as a person, as just fighting for what he believed in and fighting for other races and marrying the woman he wanted to marry, no matter what her race was back in the 50s where he, you know, could have gone to jail back then, and just that kind of a person, innovator. And that's, you know, for me, the biggest thing that they showed me was when Bruce Lee paralyzed himself working out, the doctors told him he would never walk right, let alone do martial arts again. And that wasn't good enough. When the doctors, for me, you know, he of course went on and became who he was.
Right.
For me, when the doctors told me at the accident, at the 1 year mark, you're going to get better, but you're never going to get any better. You're just going to be plateaued for the rest of your life. I didn't want to believe that.
Yeah.
And the inspiration from Bruce came, he didn't believe that either. And he worked harder and harder to always be better. And that's what it did for me was to go above and beyond these doctors.
That's
just
pretty amazing stuff, man.
Be able to walk, talk, and be here and experience life and be a dad.
Yeah. You know?
And plateau with me as your friend.
Plateau with Steve. Plateau with Steve.
Bruiser Brody.
I was going to say, pop up your friend.
No, but like me. Who's your favorite drummer of today? Of this day? Of our generation? Of this new people out there now?
Of current drummers that are not like...
current drummers.
So, I mean, because obviously, like you mentioned Sean Kinney. He's always going to be in my list. Stephen Perkins, Mike Borden. But of current times right now, the drummer from Royal Blood...
Ben Thatcher.
Yeah.
Me too.
I mean, the guy is just a beast on the drums.
Beautiful.
You know, I mean, on a local level, I love Will Andrews. I think he's a phenomenal drummer.
Absolutely.
I mean, just he's tasteful, and he's obviously skilled beyond belief.
What's the name of the guy that drums for Muse?
Oh, he's gosh, yeah.
That guy's pretty fantastic.
But Ben Thatcher, Royal Blood.
Yeah.
Oh, Joey Castillo also.
Castillo.
I mean, he does a lot of stuff, obviously, with the Bronx is one band, but also Queens of the Stone Age, Lullabies to Paralyzed. Oh, he was the drummer.
Beautiful.
And I argue, and I know people roll their eyes, but I feel like the drumming performance on that record trumps even Dave Grohl's performance, which is saying a lot.
Yeah.
Because Dave Grohl's performance on Songs for the Deaf was amazing. And
I teched for Grohl. One night,
no,
at the
shocking.
Of course,
no,
did.
I did at the
Great Slander El Corazon
off ramp, and they were doing
Queens
of the Stone.
I was there.
They were doing they called me because his drum tech's wife got sick, and they had to fly out. And they're like, "Hey, could you do it?" And I'm like, "Of course." So I went down there, and they, yeah, that was a great show. Queens of the Stone Age, Dave on drums at the El Corzo.
Yeah, no
that
doubt.
Was fun.
And
yeah.
Joey Castillo is also, he played the drums for the new upcoming Last International record. He's the guy who they hired to be their drummer for the studio sessions. Okay. He's obviously not touring with them. They have a great drummer, but he's the guy who did the drums on the new record that's going to be coming out, which Jerry Cantrell listed as his new favorite band.
I saw that. And Jerry's on Instagram.
And oh, is he?
No, and it's really him because
I'm posting pictures of his food.
No,
he's not doing Instagram.
No,
right?
He's doing. I lived with Jerry for a long time.
Just the way you said that made me feel better as a human.
Yeah,
being.
No.
Because I'm like Instagram. I'm not going anywhere near that. You're like Jerry's on Instagram. I'm like okay, because now.
And that's the thing. Jerry's the most
if
private.
Jerry could be on it.
No, and I lived with Jerry for years and years and years, and he just. I was shocked. I was like, "There's no way that's him. That's got to be Baldy. You know, the band assistant, the band guy, management." And
it's
like,
me.
And I'm looking. I'm like, no, that's Jerry posting. That's him.
I don't know the name of the drummer since he's, and obviously I've been talking about it. If you go on my social media, you see I'm just going nuts about this band. They're called the Glorious Sons.
Oh.
And I just saw them at the Crocodile. And their drummer, he's not doing anything that's going to like make you think, oh my God, he's a technical wizard, because he just keeps it simple.
Yeah.
But I want to play one track just because I think as far as the production
Absolutely.
Of the drums, I know you're a big drummer geek. Glenn, I think you'll dig it as well. I just love the sound of his drums. As Glenn. I'm telling Glenn to listen to something when his headphones
are having
off.
An OCD moment with my headphones, man.
You can do it. You got it.
I am Princess
Put it through
Cupcake.
The hole. Put it through the hole.
I have a...
Deep.
I should
Put it in the hole, Stuart.
I should be medicated, man.
Oh, there you go.
Relax the throat, Glenn.
I'm just kidding.
Sorry.
Yeah, got it. Sorry.
Right.
No, I should really be on medication.
I just love
it. But I got it, dude. It's...
You got your twirly.
Tavis is like, what are you doing with your life?
I just love the sound of his drums on this record. His song's called Sawed Off Shotgun, which is a song we're playing on KSW.
Distortion on the drum.
Yeah, it's got like that crackle to it.
I don't want to take my medicine. 24 years in the gutter again. I'm losing it. I'm losing it. Everybody's acting like they're all alright. I can barely get myself to sleep at night. I'm sick of it. Yeah, I'm sick of it.
What?
Man, it's like someone took Cage the Elephant and just added some more gain to it.
Yeah.
It's literally what I'm getting
at. The drums,
out of this.
Yeah. And like, just the music,
no,
too.
I mean, the music overall, the song, the melodies, the whole approach, the entire vibe. It's like, let's take Cage the Elephant and make it a little rougher.
Yeah.
That's great.
And, dude, like, you watch this band live, the singer is like a straight-up doppelganger for Shannon Hoon from Blind Melon.
Yeah.
Just not only how he looks, but his mannerisms. He's on stage playing barefoot, and his brother's the guitarist, but I was joking about it on the air. Him and his brother remind me a lot of the Black Crowes, but if the Black Crowes got along.
Yeah.
Because they're like, there's a lot of love on the stage. There's like six members of the band, a keyboardist, guitars, drums, obviously the bassist look. He almost looked like Kurt Hammett from Metallica, like his little brother. He just had that look, like the curly hair and the mustache and all that.
Micro Kirk.
Yeah, Micro Kirk.
Mini Kirk.
But this song is just,
I like it,
in my opinion.
My favorite thing is when these guys love, they write these poppy songs that are happy and uplifting.
But,
the lyrics are so dark.
These lyrics are dark as that.
It's just about blowing dudes for Oxycontin on the side of the street. But everybody in the crowd.
Know what I mean, man?
But
it's
I like
singing it with smiles on their face.
But who can't relate to that? Right. It's like another one, I think, from them.
It's good to know I haven't been that low, dude. But anyway, next round's on me.
Elliot Smith was genius for that.
His voice is incredible live, too. And they jam live. Like, Glenn, I wish you were there. Like, the guitarist goes,
I can't afford to go to shows. I can't even afford to go to my own show.
That's why you become friends with Ryan Castle.
Yeah, but I don't like to be the friend that asks for
Jason Ross.
Yes.
Jason Ross is the guy, because he's every show.
Jason's the greatest dude.
He is. Completely.
I remember one time I was able to get Jason into a show, and that made me feel like I finally was able to. There was the Alice in Chains reunion show that had all the remember you put together.
Oh,
the
one
benefit.
That we put together.
Yes.
The
yes.
show that we put together.
Fun fact, Tavis and I are responsible for getting Alice in Chains back together.
Showbox Soto?
Absolutely.
It was called the premiere back then.
Yeah.
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 Yes.
Yeah.
As Sean Kinney said, I was the guy that kicked him off the bar stool.
Yep.
Yes.
And that was
you need that friend.
Yes.
You need that friend.
Get off that.
How funny we had this long conversation then. And by the way, Tavish was a major part of Alice in Chains getting back together as a band.
Helping. They got back together.
Of course they did. But, you know, you kind of
helped.
Help lead them at least to do a show.
They kicked my bar stool when I got was hurt.
I was with them for finding the singer. I lived with them for the whole process from once we did that show. I moved in with Cantrell in L.A. and then the singer search started, and then auditioning different singers, and then living down there, the band just playing together and just feeling together for weeks and months. So I was there for all of it.
And I bring up the Glorious Sons. I'm obsessed with this band right now. They did an acoustic performance here at the station, which was really cool. Just a great band. It's one band that my wife and I just see eye to eye on. So we go out and get dinner with their label rep before their show. And we actually run into the band. They're at Wasabi Bistro. And we go and eat there. And their label guy, Nick, then starts talking about this guy. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He's a French artist from back in the day. His name's Serge Gainsbourg. I guess there's a documentary about him. He was like kind of like a singer-songwriter, really weird, really out there. And he tells me this story about a time that Serge was on a talk show, kind of like a French version of The Tonight Show. And Whitney Houston was on there, a young Whitney Houston. And he's telling me this story. Do you know it?
No, I was just going to say he smoked crack with her, but I guess it's probably a bad joke.
No, but it's, dude.
How twisted is that? Those two died in a bathtub, just identical scenarios, the mother and daughter. That's so tragic.
Whitney and her mom both died in a bathtub?
Whitney and his daughter.
Bobby Christina.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
I didn't know anything. Doesn't that happen when you hold a child underwater?
I'm sorry.
No, that's the mother drowning.
So back to
the lake.
Surge.
Yeah.
Surge is like this drunk, no filter French artist that just is a mess, I guess. And so he's on this panel, or he's a guest on this talk show, and so is Whitney Houston. And this guy, Nick, that works with the Glorious Sons, is telling me this story about how he starts talking because the show's in French, so the host has to sometimes translate things for Whitney to answer questions. And I guess he's saying some stuff that's inappropriate. And Whitney's like, what did he say? And then the guy's like, oh, he said that you're just a phenomenal performer. And then Serge would be like, no, I did not say that. And then he would say what he said in English. So I found the clip. I
told her Bobby Brown should be buried in the desert.
Dude.
So he run for the border.
So I bleeped it.
I apologize to all the lovely people of France for what I just, the accent.
They don't like you anyway.
Yeah, they didn't you're like
American.
Me.
No, you should apologize like you to the anyway. Whitney Houston fan club, which are big fans of the Mix cast.
Yes. Sorry about all that. Is Whitney still alive or did she check out?
No, she like died like 8 years ago or something ridiculous.
I missed it.
She was partying at the Clive Owen Grammy at the Beverly Hills, one of those hotels. That
and checked
there.
Out there.
Glenn, check your junk mail.
Really?
I might have got an email blast about it.
I'm sorry, man. I haven't even had cable TV.
She also married Bobby Brown.
I knew about the Bobby Brown thing.
They put a man on the moon, too.
Did they?
Okay, they put a man on the moon.
Debatable.
I thought that was staged.
That's true. They did kick over the set.
So, man, I've been down in my little trench fixing cars and stuff. I don't know what's going on.
That's what I love.
I got the audio. You have to listen to it. So he point blank says, no, what I said is I want to F you. And so just
nice,
dude. Here, so a lot of this is in French,
that was
obviously.
His prerogative.
Yeah, dude, right? So here we go. Here's Serge talking to Whitney Houston.
Voilà, Whitney Houston, Serge Gainsbourg, Gainsbourg pour les intimes. Voilà, asseyez-vous. Serge, dites-lui que vous l'avez trouvé sublime. Voilà, Serge Gainsbourg.
How are you?
Si ça marche, ça doit marcher.
Doesn't work. My mic doesn't work.
He says you are great.
Oh, thank you.
Voilà, no, I said she's a genius.
Voilà, he says you are genius.
Oh, thank you.
Vous êtes génial.
Thank you very much.
Oh, no. A friend of mine.
Say it.
Voilà, he says you are great. Il dit que vous êtes très jolie. C'est ça, en gros, ce que tu voulais dire.
Nah.
Oui.
You are not Reagan. I'm not Gorbachev. So, don't try, hein? I said I want to f*** her.
Yes.
Oui, alors, je vais vous traduire. Non, 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 non. He said you are great.
Dude, the look on Whitney Houston's face like, what?
Wait,
it would have been great if she'd been like, well, thank you.
But then the guy's like, no, you said, that's not what you said. And he's like, wait,
yeah,
you
that
just
is
said
what
it,
I said.
Genius.
I like how he's like, no.
No.
This is not Reagan. This is not Gorbachev. I want to bang her. Yeah. And he's like smoking a cigarette. Just zero F's given. I just thought that was freaking hilarious.
My man.
He tells this story, and I'm like, there's no way. This is not true. So I go on YouTube.
And there it is.
Found it. Just, if you just look up, probably Serge, Serge, Whitney Houston, French, on YouTube, you will find the clip, and it's not edited. They're, you hear the F word.
Or for Glenn, Whitney Houston, just Google that, and it'll show you.
But here's the thing,
just Google that. It'll show you.
Why would I Google Why would I Google Whitney Houston? Why? Why would I spend my time doing that?
Because she was in The Bodyguard, and that was innovative.
Great movie. Actually,
you know, admittedly, Kevin Costner.
I saw The Bodyguard. It was a fine film.
Well done movie.
Great movie. It made
me feel. I thought she was dead. I just wasn't sure.
So don't try, eh? I said I want to f*** her.
I did when she was in The Bodyguard, too.
Oh, yeah, who
I'm
didn't?
With that. I'm with that.
She was a smoke show.
What about Belinda Carlisle during The Heaven?
How like, did we get to Belinda Carlisle?
No. What was the name of the girl that fronted? No. Who
I'm
did the Walk Like an Egyptian? She went. She went solo. Walk Like an Egyptian was.
Oh yes.
The Bangles, and then that girl went
by Prince.
Solo.
Yes.
There was a video where she
Manic Monday.
She's in a bed with a Rickenbacker just rolling around, and I was like, I must find and destroy.
Manic Monday. Prince wrote that.
Did he?
Yeah.
But that's not what I was talking about. You were talking about Belinda Carlisle. I was trying to figure out the name of the
hot... You down the other word.
No.
I know.
Yeah, that's...
So Whitney Houston's dead?
Yes.
Way to bring it back.
But Alex sent some flowers or something.
But Serge wants to have sex
Bobby's
with her.
Bobby's still around, though.
Jeez. Serge is currently having sex with her
that's
right
like
now.
That's like Keith Richards.
She's not even fighting back.
Yeah, dude. All I know is legit look for that. Oh, and a funny story shared about speaking of Keith Richards, the Nick from the Glorious Sons, the manager guy, he was telling a story because the Glorious Sons are huge Rolling Stones fans, apparently, like just obsessive. So they found out that they were going to get to play in France with the Rolling Stones. And I guess like the drummer, he called his dad had to pull off the road because he was crying. Like the, it's just a great story of just like, you know, the whole family, everyone in the band, they all love the Rolling Stones.
Oh, yeah.
So he shared a story about with the Rolling Stones. Maybe some people know this or not. It doesn't matter if you're a fan of the band or a band opening for the Rolling Stones. They treat everybody like it's a meet and greet. It's like, hey, you want to meet the Rolling Stones? Okay, wait in this room. We have designated spots for the members of the Rolling Stones to stand in. Yep. You stand next to them, get a picture, and then they're out. It's like a 30-second meet and greet, even if you're on tour with them. It's you just don't get to meet the Rolling Stones. So I guess one of the members...
Tell Keith I've got some smack. I bet he'll be right over.
Right?
He's taken care of. He's good.
He's got a guy.
He's good.
He's got Keith many has guys.
So
I own my own field.
Apparently in the backstage room, they have little markings for each member of the Rolling Stones, so that way they don't have to figure out where to stand. So it'll just say Keith, Mick, you know, Charlie, and the rest of the group, so they know the stand in those spots. So one of the members of the Glorious Sons apparently is obsessively a big fan of Keith Richards. He's like, I need to stand next to Keith for this picture. If I'm going to get a picture with this band, I need to be right next to him. So he found the Keith spot, and he's standing
the
there
spot.
Just waiting. Like everyone else is milling about, waiting for the band, having drinks, talking. And the one member of the Glorious Sons is just standing there in the spot like, I'm ready to go. As soon as they come in, I'm next to Keith.
And the bass player takes the spot.
The band walks in. They get in the area.
Keith walked to the wrong spot.
Keith goes, I don't even know what it says. I can't even read from this distance. And stands next to another member of the band.
No.
And he's just like, you son of a bitch.
And then he's gone.
Yep. I was like, that's incredible, man. It's just again, check out the Glorious Sons. They're based out of Canada, and they're going to be, I think, one of those bands that we're going to look back on and be like, that's pretty cool that we became fans of them before anybody else, kind of a thing. So they're just pretty badass. Before we get rolling, I definitely want to hear your story.
Oh, we can save it for another episode, man.
Oh, no, man. I want to hear it. Unless you want to. It's up to you. I do want to read this email.
No, let's move on. I'll basically prelude to foreshadowing for next week.
Next week on the Migscast.
Whenever I drive night shifts, terrible things happen. As you guys know, I was basically kidnapped at one point. Well, I made the mistake of driving Halloween weekend, Friday and Saturday night, and I'm going to tell you the tale of Stinkerbell the Puke Fairy.
That will be next week's episode title. Let me just write that. Stinkerbell
the Puke Fairy. Right. You don't want to know. It looked like someone murdered a stripper in the back of my car.
Glenn,
I've never seen so much glitter.
Glenn, I'm glad that you're willing
vanilla?
To take a bullet
does it smell
and
like
go
vanilla?
Driving out on those nights.
Are you driving on Halloween?
I'm thinking about it.
You should.
That should be tame.
It's a Wednesday night.
It should be tame.
Yeah, it should be tame. It's a Wednesday night.
The weekend should be tame.
Yeah. That's a good point. But they're the ones that are going out,
pros.
Are, yes.
Well, see, that's the thing is when you're vomiting out the side of a car, I don't think of you as a pro. You know what I mean? I
just, oh, I don't know. Oh, Stinkerbell's a pro.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. We want to read this really cool email. We don't have to do an email segment. We'll get to that next week as well. But from Alex, he just said, hey, Rev, you likely have connections in the game world. You should try and get Leave by the local band Bruiser Brody on Rock Band 4.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure if you've heard of this band. They have some local celebrity on the drums and some
local celebrity. Oh, look, there's a CD right there.
I've got one in the...
Oh, can I see?
No, you can't.
Someone
touch it. Don't even look at it.
Just hold it so I can look at the back.
Don't even look
hold
at it.
Hold it so I can look at the back.
It's got the tag still on it, even.
Go. In all seriousness, holy crap, Steve and Glenn, this album is down. He also says, there's a guy from the East Coast that Wyatt only kind of looks like on guitar.
Only kinda.
But don't judge the band because of that. The rest of the guys kick major ass. In all seriousness, holy crap, Steve and Glenn, this album is definitely my second favorite record ever. Sorry, after the new Coheed and Cambria record, which I'm not opposed to being beyond that. Love the EP, but this definitely blows it out of the water. 9.9 out of 10. Ooh. 0.1 deducted for not having Rev and Steve duet.
We'll do Islands in the Stream on the next one.
In all seriousness as well, is this Bruiser Brody for me, I've been, like I said, I've been in the studio. I'm fortunate with some great songwriters and stuff, but this band is still as fun and amazing sounding. I'm excited to listen to this loud because in the studio, you don't get to hear the mastering, final mixing and stuff. But
mastered by the dude that mastered the last Faith No More record.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yes. More Applebaum.
And you'll notice he makes it beefy.
But that was the thing was you and I were able to go A and B from the first to the second a little bit on your phone quite a while ago.
I don't remember that.
I just made you.
I might have been wasted when that happened.
Every time I turn, he synced onto my car, his might Bluetooth. Have been. Every time I start my car now, it's like, do you want to be Steve's phone or your phone? I'm like,
sorry, Chad.
But no, and
you'll
and
never
dude,
forget me.
You're drumming.
Thank you.
Seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in the studio with a lot of drummers, and that first watching you guys, it was great because we did that. You guys performed that album, just went in a slam. I mean, just in like a day and a half, just slammed it. I remember.
Yeah, the whole record was done in
4 days.
4 days. Mm-hmm. After the first song of him just. You were hitting that snare so hard that it literally, I think it took me 4 minutes. I had to completely.
I remember that.
The whole inside of
the drum set.
I had to take apart the complete snare because you're like, we got 3 minutes, so we'll do the next song. So I grabbed the snare because I could hear something rattling. And then I was like, everything's inside. I had to take it off, put the whole snare back together. All the hardware was just rattling.
I remember that. You're like, everyone, wait. And
just
you
wait.
Rebuilt that snare. Yeah, man.
Thank God you were there.
We're ready. Let's go. It's tune. Go.
The drums sound so nice because of your tunings and your work on fixing up my kit. Because if it was up to me, I would just be like, good enough.
Well, and that kit was the one that you gave to me. I took the wrap off it. I redid the bearing edges and made it, and just brought it, just tuned it up a little bit and made it different color.
Yeah.
But it's sort of beautiful. Beautiful kit.
Yeah, nice Ludwig kit. You can't go wrong with that. But yeah, dude, I mean, obviously, I can't thank you enough for your contribution to that record.
But
which is going to be in stores, available November 23rd.
Nice.
Kickstarter people, check your mailbox if you haven't done so already.
You should be getting it.
And go on our page, on our YouTube page, just type in Bruiser Brody Leave. We have a lyrics video for the song Leave. And in the very near future, we'll also have a video for Everyone's Dead.
Yeah. And it's just amazing. I'm excited to hear this album.
I can't wait to hear what you think of it.
I know.
Yes.
It's great.
Awesome. Well, I think that's pretty much the go. Andy, thank you so much. Again, if people
I'll get that to you to link.
It's a Facebook link, right?
Yeah, it's Facebook link. I'll get a Facebook.
I have it.
I'll get it to the school. We'll get you Sifu Andrew, and then I'll get you an email that's membership. Like, boom, there'll be a click. Here's the email to go straight to membership.
And people could just message probably on the Facebook page. I'll get to one of you guys as well, right?
Yeah, Sifu Andrew Kimura.
Sifu Andrew Kimura. Or
Taki Andrew Kimura.
The Junfang, or even the Junfang Gung Fu Institute. You can message that as well, the school itself.
Nice.
So I'll get you linked up with everything. Yeah. And can I get a shout out to my boss for letting me be here?
Don't tell my boss I'm here. Okay.
Of course you can give a shout out.
Keith, my boss, he's letting me be here, not generating any revenue for him for the whole half a day. So
thank you, Keith,
at A&A Island Services. Thank you, brother.
What a guy.
A&A Island Services, where we service
An island.
And homes and everything.
Okay.
And then Andy, thank you for the direction you give me because everything through my healing process. Everything was as you heard, a little inspired through Bruce and helping me get through it. But the Kimuras are the one that opens the door, you know, and there's a reason why Bruce said, close the LA school, close this school. But you know what, Taki, keep that school going, because he knew that the level of what it would be kept at, you know, and God, it's just been amazing.
Well, I can also just attest to just from knowing you, and you were never not a good person. Yeah. Like, I mean, I've always been friends with you, but you know, we lost touch, and I knew you as one way, and then when we reconnected and started hanging out more, it was post getting to do stuff with Andrew and the rest of the crew, and it's a noticeable difference of how great of a human being you are, and you were already a great dude.
Well, thank you.
But you know, you're truly one of my best friends, and I'm lucky to have you in my life, and I would say that is in part to what you guys do for Tavis, which is I think is the ultimate testament. Like, you talk about legacy, and it's not, I mean, yeah, you can throw a one inch punch and I'm never gonna let you do it to me. I don't care.
Well, I'm not allowed. Andy said good decision.
Every time he comes to me, he's like, hey man, you play hockey, can I give you the one inch punch on the ice?
Big,
and I'm like,
big.
And then my response, and I won't fudge, no. But you'd have to bleep it if I said the truth. I'm like,
smart man.
You're not punching me in the chest willingly.
No, you'd have a book.
I don't care.
Be a book dispersing the energy.
I've seen the videos. It doesn't look like fun.
It's a thing called the xiphoid process. Isn't that the little tip? Yeah. You just snap off his xiphoid process.
Yeah,
I have no idea what you're talking about. The center bone, whatever that center bone is. I have no idea what you're talking about. I just like to hit things. The best part of it, too, is when people walk up to you and say, hey, would you do it? And you're like, I've found my calling. People want me to
hit them.
And then they thank me for hitting
them.
It's
like Fight Club.
Hey, bro, I swear.
I want you to hit me as hard as you can.
My wife is super curious about the one-inch punch. Can you please go over and don't tell her you're going to do it, though. Your wife? Never mind.
My
that's a whole different
punch.
Yeah, that's what my
wife
calls.
That's a whole different punch.
That's my love, Mike.
That's a whole different punch.
That's the one-inch flop, actually.
That's a Enter the Dragon Lady. Remember that porn?
That's that me at full
the
attention.
Bruce Lee movie to have
the
scene.
That's the only one I've seen.
The porn parody? Wow. Well, dude, I mean,
right. I love you, Steve.
What
I
a weird testament,
do.
But that's, hey, thank you for thank you. Turning Tavis into a decent human being.
Again. Again.
It's my civic duty.
Yes. Hey, he was the one that said he was rebooted like a computer, man, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. A lot of ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ones and zeros.
Mine's mostly zeros. I can't figure it out. Before we go, one last thing. Make sure you go to Glenn Cannon's Kickstarter page. What are we, like 13 days, 14 days left?
Yeah, no. We are, as of today, it should be 7 days
Ooh.
Left.
No!
The good news is, we did, we're funded.
No big deal.
I hit my goal.
Congratulations.
Next album, Win the Pain?
No, not Win the Pain.
This is just me doing my thing, actually.
Yeah.
I'm really, really stoked about it. But that $6,000, well, actually, Tavis will verify, $6,000 is a shoestring budget.
Yes.
We're going to track this thing mostly live because I can't really afford studio time, mastering, duplication. So we're funded, and now we're past that mark by about $800.
Yeah,
so
I think it was like $6,800 and some change. Yeah. So keep donating, though, but if you get the album in advance.
Keep it coming. Basically, the more we get, the more freedom I'll have to really create. I know, you know, if that makes sense. But yeah, we're funded, which is great news. But seriously, we still need as much support as we can possibly get. And hoping to be in the studio. Actually, with Live Day, I might have to push tracking the album back into December because now I've just got way too much on my plate.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping to be tracking the record by the end of November. But Devil in the Sunshine. If you just Google Glenn Cannon album or Glenn Cannon Devil in the Sunshine, you'll find the Kickstarter and could still use your love and support.
Or if you want to PayPal me some
really
money, I'll pass it off to Glenn. And
with a nominal finder's fee.
Minus a VIG.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
A little vigorous.
Thank everyone that has stepped forward to show their support. It really, I wasn't even confident that it would come together. I really wasn't. So,
well, clearly you make stuff that make people feel.
Yeah.
So clearly they're saying thank you for making them feel.
Yeah. Dude, I was overwhelmed by the response it got and still am. Like, just really, really humbled by it. And I'm hoping to make something really special. And you guys are all a part of that. So
pretty pumped for
that. Your legacy, and your beautiful wife, Tawny.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, God bless you. I love you, baby.
Hell yeah, Tawny.
Yeah.
She's been. She's my.
What's up, girl?
Co-pilot.
We're badass.
Yeah. We're building this thing together.
I love that look. Nice, I love that look when he gets cross-eyed at a show, and mm-hmm. it's like time for her to drive him home.
Yep. You know, it's kind of the look that you have with me.
No, I love it.
After a Bruce and Brody show, I'm like, Travis.
I'm usually here. Have one more. You don't have to drive.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
But her look when she's just done. It's like time to go. Well, they're gone.
Tavish got to be at the show where we all collectively had the meltdown at Tony V's in Everett, where you stepped on Travis's head.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. That was actually...
Jeff Rouse's bass came unplugged. Oh, wait, that's every show.
That's every show.
That's every show.
But did he have his fly up or not?
I never pay attention to that there, Rev.
I'm just busy looking at that one guy.
Yeah. Different band.
Yeah. He's been shut down at White River Amphitheater. Rouse. It is every show.
Dude,
isn't it?
He did it on White River too.
And I've seen him play many other bands.
Never done it with
and
Duff.
And I've never seen it happen to any other.
Never
it's
seen
just
it
with us.
It's weird how it never happens with Loaded. It's weird that it just never happens with
You know
Duff.
What it is?
I think it's almost like he cares more.
It's more punk rock for him.
I think he's more sober at other band shows. But with us, he looks at the rest of them and goes, I'm going to need a drink too.
No, it's funny. That Tony V show, I remember showing up and life had just been hitting me like a bag of hammers. The first person I walked into was Jeff, and I'm like, hey man, how you doing? He's like, you want to get a drink? And I was like, yeah, I really need one. And that was how that night, that was like at 5 o'clock.
Yep. And then we pull up and Tavish was driving and I see you guys and I'm just like, I'm in too. And then poor JT is sober whatever month it was.
Oh, that's right. JT was the only one that was sober. I lost my mind that night. I actually had a bit of, it was like, there was foreshadowing again.
Travis held it together.
Foreshadowing of the breakdown to come, man. Because I was a few months out from just my total meltdown. But
and there was
that was the first red flag. Like, dude, something's wrong inside of your soul.
Yeah, but you lost complete visual faculty of where you were mid set, but you still flawlessly played the set. There's a point where you came over to me. I'm standing on the side of the stage just going, God, it's beautiful. And you came over to me and said something like, I have no idea where I'm at.
Sounds about right.
And I swear to God, and I just went, all right. There are many of those nights I've had in my past. Man. But then at that point, because I mean, for me, as a tech, I use all my facilities. I use my visual to see if something's wrong, my hearing. I listen to every note of every instrument being played simultaneously on the set.
Right.
So if something drops out, I go, whoop. And I look, and you're perfect.
So I'm pretty sure that might have been the show, too, where like I was looking at Tavish, and he comes over because he thought something was wrong. Like, he's like, what do you need? And I'm just looking at him, I don't know what to do. I was like, I was just looking at you, man. I was just the only person I can make contact with and visually see. Like, there's nothing wrong. And if there was, I have no idea if there is anything wrong. But fix it if you want. I don't know. But yeah, there's a video of that. Top Left TV filmed that set.
Oh, my God.
But it's never, I think even like Andy would probably just like, yeah, I got that on video, but it'll be a while until I put that out. Probably like.
It's weird. All the members of the band individually threatened me, and so I haven't released the video of that
hopefully one day it does go out there because I am curious to see what it looked like from the perspective of the audience.
I think it was a fairly punk rock show.
Which is typical for us.
Yeah.
Travis is, God, he's power.
Yep.
I've worked with some great singers and that boy's got lungs.
He's got pipes.
Lungs.
And you'll hear it on the record. You can pre-order it still. And now you can go to BruiserBrodyBand.com to be able to, like, I think that you could get the stuff there.
And to be 100% honest with you guys, as I was driving to, was it Robert Lang? Is that where we did the first album? As I was driving to Robert Lang, I don't like the studio at all. I mean, because it's so monotonous and repetitive. You spend 6 months, like, you know, when Jerry was writing, or the band was writing Black Gives Away the Blue, every day you're just in there and, you know, another guitar, do this.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm like, oh, God, I got to go in and these guys are local. And, oh, man.
Bunch of losers.
Whatever. I love them. Who cares? I don't care anymore. It doesn't matter. It's not the point. You know, but I was just thinking of mentally preparing myself and then walking in there going, these guys do better than the pros. Seriously. Nailed it. Man. Gone.
Yeah,
done.
4 days.
Let's go.
Cut it in 4 days.
That's beautiful. Yeah. No, it was, I mean, it's.
I am really proud of it, especially given the way it was done. in a lot of ways, essentially live. It's really, you know.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And it wasn't overthought. It wasn't picked apart. It wasn't second guessed to death. It was just, everybody cool? Cool. All right, go ahead and hit record.
Yep.
Did we get it? I think.
Raw.
Well, let's do it again. Nah, okay. And then we had a record.
Raw.
Yeah, it was every time just I did great. A take, we'd go in there and we'd listen, and I'm just like,
good.
Do you guys like that? And everyone's like, yeah, it's fine. I'm like, all right. Because I was like, I can nitpick if I want to and go nuts.
There. Yeah.
But. And also just knowing in the back of my mind that we have a man like Brett Eliason that's going to be mixing it.
Brett did a wonderful
job. And cleaning things up. And
yeah, but the drum, I mean, your tones were already beautiful. I mean, the engineer.
The performances were great.
And that's the thing, too, is you always have to remember, Brett's getting files that are being produced by you and someone else that are making it a tone for him.
Yep.
So yeah, no, he
did
just
magic
the raw.
As well.
Yeah, he did. But those raw notes and tones were ultimately.
It was
you
a great experience. I'm happy we have a physical copy of it to remember.
I do, Glenn.
This memory.
At some point, I think I have to sign like 50 of them. I need a photo of you flipping me off holding that record.
Oh, that's probably why people were like,
Hang on.
Some people were like, I haven't received my copy yet. They're probably the people who pledged
it's me.
For the autograph
for the
copy.
Autographs.
And they're waiting for it. Well, no, it's also Rouse, because Rouse has been out of the country.
Thanks, man.
Rouse has been in Mexico or something like that.
With his family.
Yeah.
Partying.
So if you did get the record, but you got it autographed, you actually are getting it at a disadvantage because you have to wait for Jeff Rouse to come back to America.
So, Glenn, are you waiting for your... autograph edition?
Is that
one. Why you don't have one?
I don't have a copy of the EP either. Yeah, I'll wait till at some point I got to sit down and sign a bunch.
Yeah.
And even then I'll be like, oh, I forgot to get one.
Put it.
I'm the king of that. I don't have any of the stuff I've done.
All right, why don't we get on out of here? But pledge on Kickstarter.
Thank you, Rev.
Check out Andy and Tavis.
Your input was amazing.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you guys very much for having us on. Yeah,
this was a blast. Andy. And as always, really appreciate you guys. I don't think anything's coming up this weekend. Oh, 3-2-1 battle, as always.
Yeah.
I'll be there on Friday nights, as I usually am. That'll be a lot of fun. Glenn, you got anything going on this weekend?
No, man. No, I don't think so. Maybe studio hunting, but yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, trying to figure out where I'm going to make this thing, because it's going to happen now. And thanks again to everyone.
Is it open season on studio hunting? Do you have to get a permit to kill studios?
No, and sadly, one of the studios in particular that Brett and I wanted to go to is booked all the way through the end of the year. So,
dagger.
Sad face. But that's okay. We'll find a home.
Awesome. So
get Marshmallow. He's great.
I will.
I love that dude. I love that.
Dude,
he was just at Freak Night.
And did you see what he looked like?
Like a giant marshmallow.
Really? But they could just have different marshmallows cruising around. He could just be sitting at home.
Which is pretty genius.
Does that mean Marshmallow from Fat Albert?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Was there a guy that won his marshmallow?
No, there's a DJ
one
called Marshmallow.
1-inch punch marshmallow?
I don't know. One inch.
Oh, song ended. Look at us. All right, tune in next week for Stinkerbell.
Stinkerbell, the Puke Fairy.
Sweet. Rev, anything going on in your world?
Nope.
Live day. Be sure to buy tickets.
Oh, man.
KISW.com. That's happening on November 20th. You heard it here first. Just don't tell our bosses because they would have gotten mad at us.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And thank you, KISW. Bosses.
We spilled the beans.
We spilled the beans 2 weeks before they were spilled on the radio.
Whoops.
Does Hair Club know?
No idea.
Excellent.
Yeah. Keep it that way.
Yeah, bring your PJs.
That's right.
Was it Rev?
It was you. It was you, dummy.
Well, you know me. What? And then me.
Tell them if they put me on payroll, I'll stop doing
then
this.
Then they can
stuff.
Fire you?
Yep. Then they can fire me.
The best part of my day was my favorite radio station was as I walked in. They were doing the show in that booth coming in.
Oh, the sound.
The 94.1. That's all I listen to all day.
Well, if you play your cards right, I'll introduce you to John Fisher one day.
Yes.
One day.
The woman.
Gene.
Gene. Yes.
All right. Delilah. Stay
Delilah. Delilah.
Stay positive, Delilah.
Stay positive, Delilah.
Hey there. I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't. And you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.